Hey, this is Owl City, and you're listening to the official Plugged In podcast.
Hey everybody, that is Adam Young, better known to pop music fans as Owl City. You may have heard the hit Fireflies, or perhaps his top 10 duet with Carly Rae Jepsen, Good Time. Well, we're going to have a good time on today's podcast because we shared a conversation with Adam unlike anything you'll ever read in Rolling Stone. In addition to his unusual path to fame, we talked about the power of music, how he's inspired by Pixar movies, and most importantly, his commitment to Jesus Christ. That's coming up in just a few minutes. But first, Paul Acey is here to discuss one of the more spiritually complex PG movies we've ever seen here at Plugged In. Yeah. You may know it as that new one with the tiger. It's called Life of Pi. Our sponsor this week is G Movies, home to a great collection of faith-based, family-friendly movies and independent films in one inspiring place. G Movies is available on Dish. For more information, call 1-800-333-DISH.
My name is Pi Patel. I have been in a shipwreck. I am on a lifeboat alone with the tiger. Please send help.
There are three things filmmakers say you shouldn't work with: kids, animals, and filming on water. Well, director Ang Lee took on all three in his big screen adaptation of the best-selling book, Life of Pi. But Paul, despite a young hero and a PG rating, parents should know this really isn't a children's story.
No, it really isn't. There's a lot of, as you mentioned, working with animals, there's a lot of animals in this film, and a lot of the animals don't make it to the end of the movie. And I think that when you're talking about young kids going to this, it's a pretty perilous, intense movie to see. And beyond that, a lot of the complex things that we're going to be talking about in this movie are just going to be above a kid's head, I think.
And, of course, the shipwreck where he loses his family.
Yeah.
I don't think we're giving anything away to suggest that. It's implied that he and the tiger are the only ones on the lifeboat at one point. So I think that is definitely something parents of younger children should be careful about.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that this book is based on a novel by Jan Martel, which is technically an adult piece of literature, and yet it's really grown very popular with young adults and that type of thing. So you have sort of those inroads, but it is a tricky piece of literature and film to sort of navigate through.
Your online review goes into much more detail than we have time for today, but let's give parents an overview of what Life of Pi does well and why it concerns us.
Yeah. Essentially, this movie focuses on Pi. He is a young Indian boy who has grown up all of his life in India, basically in the middle of a zoo, a literal zoo. His father runs a zoo there in the middle. And a little bit of the way through the movie, when Pi is an older teen, his father decides that it's time to pick up and start a new life in Canada. So they decide that they're going to get on a boat, take their animals with them. They're going to sell the animals once they get to Canada and just start over. They never get to Canada. The boat has a horrible shipwreck. We never really understand why, but essentially, the boat goes down. Most of the animals go down with it, and the only one who really survives that we know of is Pi, and he's left on a boat, essentially a lifeboat, with, in the end, a huge Bengal tiger.
Named Richard Parker.
Richard Parker.
We don't need to get into the explanation for that, but people do need to know, because we're going to share a clip in a minute, who Richard Parker is. This is a visually stunning film.
Mm, man, I think it might be one of the most visually powerful movies I have ever seen. The cinematography is just out of this world. And the beauty, the richness of the storytelling is something that cannot be minimized. And in some ways, the very power of the movie, a movie that can really bring you to tears, makes some of the elements within this movie that we're going to be talking about all the more problematic, just because it's such a good movie.
Well, I have a feeling we'll be hearing more about this film at various levels at Oscar time. Mm-hmm. In his journal, Pi describes how being adrift for days on end with a ferocious feline has changed his perspective. Check this out.
I never thought a small piece of shade could bring me so much happiness, that a pile of tools, a bucket, a knife, a pencil might become my greatest treasures, or that knowing Richard Parker was here might ever bring me peace. Without Richard Parker, I would have died by now. My fear of him keeps me alert. Tending to his needs gives my life purpose.
Yeah, you know, I love that little piece of wisdom that Pi shares with us. And I think it really exemplifies one of the things that this movie does really well. Within this very harrowing situation that Pi finds himself in, he is always very eager to talk about how grateful he is for what he's been given, even for the tiger in the boat. And even as the movie goes on and things are stripped away, you know, he loses a lot of the stuff that he was grateful for in that clip, and yet he always comes back to a position of thankfulness and gratefulness.
And often to God, recognizing God.
Yeah.
Paul, at its core, this is a film about survival and coping with what life throws at us, which is great to a point, but without giving anything away, there's a twist where all of this becomes a metaphor for what I like to call pluralistic religious pragmatism. In other words, believe whatever you want about God. If it gives you hope and meets your needs, it's all good. And it's not a peripheral thing. It's a core theme.
Yeah, I think it is. And you know, the movie, the end of the movie can be maybe interpreted a variety of ways. You can bring your own baggage into this and take from it what you will. But at the same time, I think that gets to your point in that even as Pi embraces, he is, in the movie, he describes himself as a Hindu, Christian, Muslim. And he has sort of incorporated all these different beliefs and deities into his own worldview. At times, that can feel very beautiful. But of course, for Christians, it's incredibly problematic.
Yeah,
know?
Because what happens is we lose the idea of objective truth.
Yeah.
And at one point, he's a seeker grappling in a healthy way, even with Christ's sacrifice on the cross. And, you know, he ponders how the innocent could give his life for the guilty. Very respectful.
Yeah.
But in the end, the film does more to dismiss the exclusive claims of Christ than honor him.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that comes from sort of that Hindu background that he grew up with. And in addition to that, you have his very agnostic or atheistic father who encourages him. He tells him in the beginning of the film that all religion is darkness. And so you have a little bit of that element sort of wrapped up into this. Now, you do find that Pi refutes that notion. This is not an atheistic movie by any means. It's very appreciative of God. But what God is, this is not a Christian God we're talking about. And that becomes an issue.
Yeah. John 14:6, Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." And Life of Pi sort of takes the greatest story ever told and turns it into one of many equally therapeutic stories that will work just fine together.
Yeah.
You know, it made me sad in the end of it. I felt like I'd spent 2 hours gazing into the eyes of a beautiful creature that had no soul.
Well, that's very appropriate that you bring that up, you know, because that's one of the themes that you find within the movie. I don't think that I was quite as down on the movie as you were. I think that both of us would agree that for people who have mature faiths, they can go into this movie, they can come out of it and have incredible discussions over a piece of pie, so to speak,
right?
Or a cup of coffee. You know, this is a movie that inspires discussion. But for people who don't have that kind of background, this movie can really be confusing and muddying and quite disturbing.
Well said. I think we'll leave it at that. When it comes to mainstream music parents can get behind, it's hard to beat the wholesome visual poetry of the one-man band Owl City. In 2009, Adam Young went from creating music on a computer in his parents' basement to overnight success, thanks to the internet and a little song called Fireflies. We talked about that, his Christian faith, and more when Adam called us just before a show on his European tour. We have a special musical guest on the line with us today. It's Adam Young, better known to fans of electronic pop as the solo act Owl City. Adam, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, is electronic pop the best way to describe your sound? I mean, if somebody asked you to put it into words.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty close to home. I think what I do is has always been inherently electronic, but I have kind of dabbled a little bit in some of the other sort of typical rock sounds. But I think what I do, yeah, is pretty much under that umbrella.
Is it true that you get a lot of your musical inspiration from listening to movie soundtracks?
It is, yeah. You know, it started early on. You know, I definitely grew up with a lot of the Pixar films, you know, Toy Story and whatnot. And I remember just there's certain themes throughout these films that are so, you know, just kind of magical given the imagery of the film,
yeah.
These kind of other worlds. And there's just these certain threads that just spark these kinds of emotions and aesthetics in me. And I just think, wow, I got to go try to create something that taps into that same emotion. And a lot of times that's like all the inspiration I really need, you know, for a given song.
Let's talk a minute about your hit duet with Carly Rae Jepsen, Good Time. Of all the female pop singers out there, why Carly Rae and how did that come together?
Yeah, I sort of had Carly Rae. She was kind of my one and only person on my list of of folks that I wanted to approach for the song, just basically because I think she's got just a great spirit to her voice. She, you know, what she kind of does is very very uplifting. It's very sort of fun and innocent and pure in that respect, in terms of it's just about having a good time, you know. So she was the one and only person I approached, and it was very easy how it all came together, because I basically just sent her an email, and I said, you know, introduce myself, and I said, I've got this great kind of fun duet called Good Time. I would love to see, you know, get your thoughts on. And she wrote back and said, I would love to feature on this. You know, she said, ironically, I can't get into the same studio with you because our schedules are so different, but we live in an age with the internet, so just send me the files and I'll record them and send them back. So that is really a testament to technology these days. We actually didn't meet face to face until the song was finished. So it's crazy.
Well, each of you sort of took the industry by storm with a smash single, yours being Fireflies, hers, Call Me Maybe. When you finally met to shoot the video, how did being members of that overnight success club kind of help you relate to each other?
It was very cool. You know, up until that point, I hadn't really had very many other people I could talk to about kind of what that was like. You know, a few years ago for me, that song Fireflies really kind of took me by surprise, and everyone else involved in the project, just in terms of how quickly it rose to success and whatnot. And so the same thing has kind of happened just this year with Carly Rae. So it was very cool to kind of, in between shots during the music video shoot, I could kind of, you know, connect with her on that level. And it was, you know, there's this kind of this knowing glance that kind of passed between us. You know, we've kind of both been there a little bit, and it was very cool.
Yeah. Well, going back a few years, you broke through at a time when aspiring singers all seemed consumed with getting on reality shows like American Idol, but that's not how you got noticed. For folks who haven't heard your story, how does a talented young guy get discovered in Owatonna, Minnesota?
Yeah, you know, it really is kind of a surprising story, and I even kind of think, is this really me? You know, do they really have the right guy? You know, kind of given where I'm from and where I grew up and whatnot. But it really all comes down to the internet and especially social networking, as far as my story relates, because, you know, I'm from a small town. I'm an only child. I'm a pretty reserved, shy person. So the internet, especially MySpace at the time, was kind of my way of being a little bit anonymous and sort of promoting what I do without really even knowing I was promoting it. You know, I was just kind of creating songs, putting them up on MySpace for you know, some of my friends. I was going to send some links around to my friends and family, and for whatever reason, people started to connect with what I'd done, and this whole fan base has started to build behind the scenes without me even really knowing it. So, praise the Lord for just kind of being in the right place at the right time. It was certainly His plan.
Yeah, and in its first week, Fireflies had 650,000 downloads. Mm-hmm. Any advice for other young musicians who are writing music in, well, at least for now, relative obscurity?
Yeah, I would say my biggest piece of advice is just to truly be yourself, and to make sure that you're not that you're not kind of ever falling into the temptation to create music purely for the radio or for, you know, iTunes or for whatever it is. I think as long as you have a very pure intention as far as, you know, the fact that you want to create music that makes you feel something, you know, I think sometimes in this industry it can get a little bit skewed as far as what's cool and what's popular and what,
right,
what there's,
yeah,
kind of a call out to do. So I think if your you know, motives are pure and heartfelt from the start throughout, I think that's kind of that's really what you got to hold on to.
Well, when you take a look at the pop culture, pop music landscape these days, are you noticing any interesting trends?
It's an interesting thing to see how influenced pop music, especially on top 40 radio right now, is so influenced by, like, European dance music. You know, there's a lots of these kind of four-on-the-floor kick drum, very
right,
kind of club sensibility songs. And it's cool for me to hear that, because I've been a big fan of a lot of, like, Dutch kind of trance DJ music for a long time. So it's been interesting to see that kind of transition and how that sort of, you know, trend has influenced popular music today. And it's a fun thing to kind of try to second guess what's going to be the next movement, you know, what's coming next. And it's kind of fun to kind of stay on top of that.
Yeah. And the power of music to touch people's lives, I think that's something we both appreciate. How have you observed or experienced that personally?
Oh, in a lot of different ways. Even almost on a nightly basis when I'm out on the road on tour, somebody will come up to me and say, your music has changed my life and here's why. And it can be a whole different range of reasons, you know, certainly different per individual. But there's been a handful of folks who have said that my music has actually sort of saved their lives, you know, maybe been the kind of determining factor to keep them from committing suicide, even to a certain extent. And that, you know, how do you even respond to that? It's such an overwhelming feeling for me to know that maybe my music has been used to save somebody's life. You know, it's that is truly what it's all about. You know, if there's ever a moment when I'm feeling like being in the spotlight is, you know, I'm starting to get like used to it, or I'm starting to get comfortable, or I'm starting to feel myself kind of appreciate that a little too much, you know, I always think, man, that's not what this is about. You know, the fame and the fortune is not going to last forever, and changing lives and moving hearts is really what it's all about.
Well, and I appreciate your desire to really be true to yourself and your calling, because your songwriting typically lands in a place that parents can feel good about. I get the feeling you're pretty intentional about that.
Yeah. I've always felt the most inspired just as a listener to other bands and other artists when I feel the most uplifted, you know, versus the most dragged down, you know. So,
sure.
So if I did have a message, you know, that I was trying to send out into the world, is just that sense of optimism and that sense of hope. I think is a positive thing. So yeah, I want to leave a positive mark on this world.
Well, in interviews, you've been very comfortable talking about your faith in Jesus Christ. Can you tell us a little about your spiritual roots, how you came to know the Lord? You did grow up in a Christian home, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, my parents and I, you know, me being an only child, were very involved in the church growing up in southern Minnesota, a very small town. Whenever the doors were open, we were basically there. So I definitely spent a lot of time in church there, you know, playing guitar on the worship team and stuff. That was some of my early exposure to actual playing music and whatnot. Although I think, like a lot of stories, it just Christianity and the gospel in general didn't really quite connect with me and really hit home until right after high school. That's when things, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with you're finally moving out on your own and you're making your own decisions and whatnot, and the world feels a little bit more close and a little bit more real to you. So that was when the Lord used that to kind of think, you know, kind of pull me back into focus and really speak to me. And ironically, all of the success that I've been so blessed to have over the past couple of years with Owl City has really drawn me nearer to the Lord too, which I've been so thankful for.
Well, that was going to be my next question: is how has God been challenging you in new ways in light of all the success you've experienced?
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with stamina, you know, kind of spiritual stamina out on the road. When you're touring 6 months of the year, there's lots of ways, you know, you can be dragged down or fall into temptation and whatnot. He's really taught me integrity and what that means, you know, to be surrounded by the right kind of people out on the road. I've got about 12 other folks out here with me, solid believers, very very good sort of support structure, and he's just taught me how to keep, you know, go with the flow, but stay grounded, stay in the Word, you know, remain steadfast, run, you know, fight the good faith and run the race, and that's what it's all about.
Oh, that's great to hear. That is so encouraging. Has being a Christian in mainstream music given you opportunities to touch lives maybe in ways you couldn't have had you been signed to a Christian label?
Yeah, I believe so. I really do. I think there might be a crowd of folks that maybe are a little bit more open to what I might have to say in terms of spiritual things, given the fact that I'm not purely based on a Christian label or maybe 100% based in that scene. So, you know, it was never something I was very intentional about as far as where I fell in terms of categories, you know, with genre and with all that stuff. I just prayed, you know, God, oh, wherever you want my music to fall, wherever you want it to kind of reach people, where they're at, whatever it is, I just leave that up to you. And he really has opened a lot of doors in that respect. And the response from non-Christians has been very positive whenever I've spoken about spiritual things and whatnot.
Of all the songs you've released to date, which in its own way would you say captures your passion for the Lord best?
I have a song called Meteor Shower off of an album I put out a couple years ago called Ocean Eyes, and it's basically a worship song. And we try to play it every tour because there's something very powerful about it. It's a very simple song. And it says in just a few words, you know, why I'm doing what I'm doing, and how dear and near to me the Lord has been over the past couple of years, and it's just a simple little melody, but it's something about that song, and I would say that Meteor Shower.
I can finally see that you're right there beside me.
I've wanted to make sure that I never kind of hid the fact that I am, a person of faith and that I am a Christian. And I think it would be a crime if I were to leave that out because it's such a part of who I am. And it's such a big reason why I do what I do. And you know, at the end of the day, I want to just make sure that I'm giving credit to where credit is due and just being a good reflection of where all this is coming from. And I want to be a good steward of this life that I've been given because it's truly not mine.
Well, God has given you a real gift for putting words together. I'm curious. I heard that the name Owl City actually came through your playing a video game. Is that true?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I actually grew up playing a lot of video games. You know, a lot of that has to do with maybe with some of my kind of whimsical lyrics and just this kind of otherworldly stuff. But yeah, Owl City, you know, it's a little bit of a random name, but I think it has an imagery to it that you know, when I hear the name, my mind automatically goes somewhere else, and it kind of just creates this whole new world that I can explore and imagine. And there's something cool about just the imagination and where it will lead if you kind of open that door. And so that's what it's all about. Yeah.
You're in the United Kingdom right now. You've got a show tonight, don't you?
That's correct. Yeah.
Well, we won't keep you from it. Adam, God bless you, and thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate that.
You know, Paul, a lot of mainstream artists will wear crosses or claim to be Christians, but when you hear Adam talk, there's really something there.
Yeah, he's really inspiring. I really like his music, and to hear his heart is just so impressive. And I think what he said about surrounding himself with people on the road who protect his integrity, man, I just love that.
Yeah, we should keep him in our prayers. Of course, Owl City's current tour is in support of the album Midsummer Station, which we reviewed on this podcast. If you'd like to listen to that on our website, it's episode 165. Hey, thanks for making us part of your week, a week where, here in the United States, we're celebrating Thanksgiving. And we are thankful to God for so many things. At the top of that list is the reliability of His Word, the Bible. It does matter what story we believe, because the truth sets us free. By the way, that's just one of the themes on Canopy Red's latest album, Wake Up. We're going to play a clip from the track Paralyzed in just a moment. But first, we need to thank Paul Acey, our engineer Dave Salkeld, and our very special guest, Adam Young. Our sponsor this week has been G-Movies, available on Dish. Remember, if you're thinking about heading to the theater this holiday weekend, avoid any unpleasant surprises by visiting PluggedIn.com first. Because after all, it's not just entertainment.
The official Plugged In podcast is a production of PluggedIn.com and Focus on the Family.